Well, hi, this is Nicole Brandon with Unlimited Life, and we welcome you and thank you so much for joining us on today's show. Today is such an exhilarating and such an exciting show, and last week we had Ian Wynn talking about the Superhuman Project, and I've actually been thinking all week about everything that Ian was saying about that you never want to be mediocre, that you never want to live in a comfortable state, that you always want to see what's next, that you always want to take risks, that you always actually want to be afraid and go for it anyway, because that's really where the next level of your life lives. And so I can't think of a better entrance into today's guest. Today's guest is so special. He happens to be a friend of mine and one of my favorite people on the planet. Plus, he just does something I absolutely love, which he is a stuntman, and he will talk all about what that means and all the areas of coordinating that, doing that himself, what it looks like in life, what it looks like in film, and I know that we just have so much to share. So I want to tell you a little bit about him because he's just remarkable. He began his career in stunts in 1985 performing on live stunt shows. Then he went on to work for Walt Disney World for 6 years performing in approximately 8,000 live show performances. I don't know if any of you have ever done one show and now how much energy it takes to actually give yourself to an audience and that high energy level. And imagine doing that 8,000 times. Some of the shows included the Indiana Jones, the Epic Stunt Spectacular Show, and Epcot Center's the Kaleidoscope Show that he did. He has developed and he has coordinated many large one-time stunt events, including 2 years of the University of Florida's Gator Growl, which, you know, they performed it there in the football stadium. It was the largest pep rally with 40,000 people in attendance. He has worked on over 200 television shows and films, and we're certainly going to ask him about that today. I mean, we can just talk for weeks and weeks and months about all of the places that he has worked, and each one is more exciting than the next. His work has included working with Anthony Perkins, stunt double, in the final movie, Psycho movie, and he doubled for Tom Hanks in 3 films, including Forrest Gump. He also doubled as Jim Carrey a few times. Currently, he is doubling for the TV show Justified on the FX channel and the NBC new hit show, which is Grimm, where he's playing the werewolf. Recently, he was a film stunt coordinator. And it's amazing when you talk to people, and not only, you know, some people teach, some people do, some people create, some people are inventors, some people, you know, are the mechanics of the talent, other people are the creators of the talent, other people are the stars, other people are the connectors, other people are the deal makers, other people are like the lords and the overseers. When we talk about the wheel of success, all of the things it takes to make someone successful, it's amazing because Alan Robinson actually hits every single wheel of success. He can be the overseer, like Richard Branson oversees all his companies. He could be someone like Warren Buffett that, you know, looks into a spreadsheet and, like, little pictures jump out. He can actually look into something and pictures, images come out, and he knows how to fix things. He's actually created things overnight that have worked for movies. He's also somebody that is the creator, he's the mechanic, and he is the celebrity and the star. So how one person can embody that much talent, bring that to the stage, bring that to the screen, and actually make other people feel safe and other people be in awe at the very same time. So as a stunt coordinator, you know, he did Killers with Ashton Kutcher. He did State of the Play with Russell Crowe, Get Smart with Steve Carell, Blades of Glory with Will Ferrell, Poseidon, The Memoirs of a Geisha, and Polar Express. And Bob Zemeckis is actually a personal friend. I just love that movie. Alan has his commercial pilot's license, flying hot air balloons, and I know I've got so many questions about that, and he's going to tell you an amazing story with that. He is a prorated skydiver with over 1,000 skydives, and he is a senior parachute rigger. He is an accomplished stunt rigger for live shows, for television and feature films, and rigging the safety of equipment is almost as important as the fly, and so he has all of this in him, which is just remarkable. Memorable stunts include a record bungee jump from 3,000 feet out of a hot air balloon after cutting loose and parachuting down, and that was the thing that I really wanted to talk to him about. Like, you know, when I was talking to him once in a conversation, and he was saying that you can't test that, you have to know it works. And how do you live on the edge like that and just know it works? How does one's brain know it works? He did a skydive at the back of a Boeing 727 jet and a BASE jump from only 177 feet. For fun, he enjoys road racing, super bike motorcycles, and sports cars. And I've seen his sports car. It's probably one of the most beautiful cars I've ever seen in my life. So this is one of my heroes, one of my mentors, one of my friends, and certainly somebody that I think is one of the most phenomenal people on our planet. So I welcome today's guest, Alan Robinson. Alan, welcome so much.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here. Nicole, you're the best, and I'm just honored to you know, that you're a friend of mine and that you've invited me to be on your show. Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you. This is such an exciting day for me because you and I have talked about this in the past. I love stunts. You know, other people love Christmas. Mm-hmm. They love chocolate fudge cake. They love whatever it is. I love stunts. I love the art of stunts. I love what it stands for. I love physically what it means. I love what it means to be able to watch it, to know things are possible. And I guess my first question is, so where do you start? At what point, like, are you a kid in, like, you know, Batman pajamas, or do you just, are you, I mean, at what point do you say, God, I have this in me, and, like, this is what I want to do, or where did you begin?
Well, that's a great question. You know, I really believe the beginning starts, you know, when you're a small child as you're developing, because those are what, you know, you develop those traits and those desires and to you know, take risk and to enjoy challenges and be adventurous. I think, you know, I look back at my childhood and I was quite the kid that was always into everything. I took things apart and I put them back together. I wanted to try things, see if they worked. I was probably 4 years old and jumped off of a dining room table onto a sleeping German Shepherd because it looked soft to land on. I can laugh now. But I think the beginning starts, you know, get ingrained in you early. And then it's just, you know, it's just a real jewel if you can develop that as you get older and go, hey, I want to do this. How can I get paid to do it? And but my beginning really is a fluke in a sense, because the beginning of stunts, I answered an ad in a paper. And it stated, stuntmen wanted, will train.
Really?
And it was for... It was, yep, and that was for a live show outside of Atlanta, Stone Mountain Park. And, you know, I was in my mid-20s and bouncing around from being a snow ski instructor and a bartender and doing just fun jobs. And I was, well, what's next on the adventure for Alan Robinson? And as I read this ad, I said, that sounds like fun. I want to do that. And I had the background, the athletic background, it took, and the gentleman put me to work doing live shows, and that's kind of how I got started.
So when you started as a stuntman, were you doing jumps, or were you doing fights, or what were they looking for?
Well, this was a summer part-time job for a theme park, and it was a train that went around Stone Mountain Park, and then on the backside of the train, the train track is a 5-mile loop around Stone Mountain Park. On the backside was an old Western town set. And the guests would ride in the train, and the train would stop at this old town set, and we would perform this several different Western gunfight shows. And they were little 5-minute shows, and I started by just doing this summer live show. And that's what got me hooked, because at the end of that season, I'm like, this is what I want to do. And I was doing 5-minute shows. I was doing two an hour. So I was only working 10 minutes out of the hour. So my mind was going, wow, I'm getting paid this amount of money. And I'm only working 10 minutes out of the hour. The rest of the time, I can just goof off. So I was thinking, this is great. And I was getting paid to play.
That's amazing. You know, it's funny that you say that because I talk about all the time that Shakespeare calls them players and we call them screenplays. And on stage they're called plays. So there has to be an element of fun. Otherwise, the word play would not be in all of the elements of our entertainment. But when you look at stunts, you don't think, oh, gosh, they're playing. When you're watching James Bond or something, you're thinking, wow. And it's scary and it's adventurous and it's thrilling and it's risk-taking and it's, you know, death-defying. Your people are holding their breath and you hear people ooh and ah. It's the only time in movie theaters that when you're listening, you know, to sounds in a movie theater, you know, people, when they cry, when they're touched emotionally, they have these little silent tears running down their face and, like, trying to make sure other people next to them don't know that they're crying. But when there's, like, you know, action adventure, you hear people scream out loud in theaters and they, like, and it's totally acceptable. People, the more they're screaming, the more fun the movie is. And so you create that for people. And so what's that like to know that the work that you do has that kind of effect on people?
Well, you know, going back to playing, I mean, I speak for most stunt people. We you know, like I said, we get paid to play because what we do and the training it takes to be a stunt person and the actual activity most of the time is fun because we are adrenaline junkies. So we like living on the edge. And so that is fun for us. Our job is fun. As we like to say, we get to go to work. We don't have to go to work. We get to go to work. So it's an attitude of, you know, of fun. But, you know, when the final product is done and you look at it and it's edited well and stunts are portrayed well on film, it's a great sense of satisfaction. You're like, wow. But I tell you, most of the time I look at it and go, wow, that's not half of it. Or that didn't even show the danger that it took to achieve that stunt. Or it didn't show the 2 weeks of rehearsals leading up to it. Or, you know. So, but there's a, you know, great sense of satisfaction when it's, you know, on screen and, you know, people are going, wow, you know, talking about it later. Wow, I can't believe that scene. You did that? Man, how'd you do that without killing yourself? You know? So, yeah, that's
amazing. Now, I know other than doing stunts, you create rigs and you have a visionary mind. You were talking to me one day about, you know, bungee jumping out of a hot air balloon or that you created like the back of a saddle or a motorcycle seat or something so someone didn't fly off at a high speed. And so how does your mind work as far as, do you have this great idea and say, okay, this would be great for this movie or this would be a great action adventure thing or this would even be great to do myself and to try this crazy thing or a solution for what's not working in the film? And I mean, that's not answering an ad in a newspaper. That's something that's in you.
Well, you know, I think we are all kind of sums of our past, you know, the total sum total of our past. And I learned early on in stunts to learn as much about everything as possible, and I live by that. So the more you learn about everything, the better you're going to be. I am creative. I'm a creative person, and I think that is one of the key points to success because the film and television world is a creative industry. When I get challenges, I look at them as challenges, it's not a bad thing. I look at them as this is challenging to me. I can figure this out. I may not know the answer, but it sure is going to be fun when they do find out the answer. And it's being creative. I like to think outside the box. And it takes a certain mindset to release your barriers around you and to be able to think outside the box. And then going back to what I said earlier about knowing about different things, I pick and choose information from different parts of my life, whether it's from scuba diving or skydiving to horseback riding or whatever it is. I can take knowledge from different parts of my life and make it work for whatever I need to make it work for.
So how did you figure out the bungee thing? Let's talk about that. Because when you told me that, I almost fell off my chair. So let's talk about that for a minute. So first of all, what did you do? Tell the audience what you did.
Well, for a TV show in Florida, I made a bungee jump from 3,000 feet. It was out of a hot air balloon, and that was the stunt. Now, I was the perfect – actually, I designed the stunt and pitched it, so it was kind of my deal from the beginning. And why I wanted to do it, because I was an expert in the three disciplines involved here. I'm a commercial hot air balloon pilot, so I know about balloons. I'm an expert in bungee because I started two bungee jumping businesses back in the early 1990s when bungee jumping was popular. I made my own bungee cords. I started a couple businesses and trained people how to become jump masters. And I was an avid skydiver. So taking ballooning, bungee, and skydiving, putting them together, I go, well, let's make that really exciting. We'll make it really big. So I said, okay, we'll make a really long bungee cord, which I made myself, personally made myself, which my neighbors thought I was crazy, stretched up and down the street. After the challenge of this particular stunt, after I finished bouncing, now I had to get down. So I said, well, I need to cut loose of the bungee cord and fall away from it and then parachute down. Now, that was all fine, but the challenge was that this bungee cord I'm attached to, it's like a stretched rubber band. And we all know when you stretch a rubber band, when you release it, it's going to come back and hit the source. It's going to come back and hit the other end. And I couldn't have this, you know, this 3-inch thick bungee cord traveling at high speed, flying back up and hitting the balloon, knocking the, you know, the balloon out of the sky and killing people. And that's just not the way we do it. So the challenge was slowing the bungee cord down on this acceleration back up towards the balloon. And I devised a parachute to work in reverse. So this parachute came out, and as the bungee cord starts to accelerate back up towards the balloon, the parachute slows it down. But as I think I told you, Nicole, that this is a stunt that I cannot test. I could not test what the forces, what kind of drag I needed in the acceleration of this bungee cord coming back. And, you know,
I have to jump in here for just a second. You're bungee jumping out of a hot air balloon, and you know that this is something you cannot test. So
right.
Doesn't like I could I go through your mind, or how do you go, okay, well, let me just – this is how I'm going to test this. This is, I have to trust. I know this is going to work.
Well, it's kind of, you know, it's like a lot of stunts where when you initially look at it, you go, oh my gosh, how am I going to do that? That's incredibly dangerous. And, you know, there's so much that can go wrong. And then what I do is I break it down into simple elements. I break it down. That's why I just mentioned I broke it down into three major elements. And then, this was one that, you know, I had to go on the best knowledge I had at the time, and it worked, obviously, and it worked flawlessly. And so there is a certain amount of faith that's involved here, where you just go, hey, I've done the best. I feel good about this. I feel like I've done my homework, and I'm going to do it. I'm not a daredevil. I won't take unnecessary risk. But there's certainly a lot of risk involved, and you have to go for it sometimes. Without risk, there's no reward.
That's incredible. Do you have, of all this time, I mean, thousands and thousands and thousands of shows you've done now and stunts and performances, do you have a favorite, something that really stands out of everything you've done that was just the cherry on the sundae?
You know, they're also unique. The big ones, the big memorable ones, like, you know, the one we were just talking about, you know, that was back in the early 90s, and, you know, I still talk about it. That was nice, but there's so many, and they all have their unique challenges. I don't really have one that I can say, hey, you know, some of them are really intense. Here's one, for example, that always sticks out. There's a movie called The Kingdom with Jamie Foxx, and a double actor in there, Ollie Solomon. And his character drives his SUV, and it blows up, and it tumbles down the street, and it crashes and rolls and tumbles. And it's a very violent crash that we have to do. And to do it once is enough is pretty exciting. Well, I to get the shot and get all the footage they needed, I end up doing it 3 times over a short period of time, over just several days of taking this vehicle at 50, 60 miles an hour, sliding it sideways and pushing a button, and a cannon fires underneath the vehicle, which flips the vehicle up in the air, and you tumble and roll down the highway. And those take a lot out of you. And so that's one that sticks out, because not only did I have an opportunity to do it once, I did it 3 times for that film.
That's fun. That's so amazing. So what does that look like? You're saying that you doubled somebody. And so for our audience that's listening, you know, I don't think that they even realize that stunt people do that. When they think about a stunt person, they just think, oh, okay, you know, they're going to be some bad guys in bicycles that are, you know, going down the stairs, or somebody in that car that's going to flip over, that's, you know, standing by the fruit stand or something like that. And all of a sudden, you know, the car runs on the side of the road and they jump and, you know, all the fruit goes everywhere and they roll down the street. But what does stuntmen do double, right, for the lead actors? And so, you know, so talk about that.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's an important part of doing stunts is, and we all have seen that, where an actor may do something, you're like, wow, that wasn't him, but you shouldn't ever say that. or did he do all his own stunts? Now, a stunt double is one of our jobs. Now, as a stunt double, we're hired to look like that actor, to walk like him, run like him, have the same posture, mannerisms, and we have to do this whatever required stunts are required for that actor. But sometimes they're as simple as just running. And you say, well, the actor could certainly do that. Well, sometimes, and the actor could, but sometimes you're hired just because it's it saves production time by you being there just to do that activity. But most of the time we're hired because it's too dangerous and too specialized and just not even considered that the actor would do it. You know, for example, like that stunt I talked about in the car crash. You know, it's not something an actor would do, could do. You know, the jobs vary from extremely dangerous and you know, using a lot of talent to just being physical. It could be as simple as running. Or you know, just stepping out of the way of something that's dangerous, you know. But you got to look like the actor. I take a great pride in doubling actors because I will do character research and watch them, watch how they carry their bodies and watch their mannerisms and watch their facial expressions and try to be the best double I can of these actors and it's I guess it's paid off because I'm still doing it. 28 years later.
Now you did. you did Forrest Gump, right? You worked on Forrest Gump.
Yes, I did. I did. That was kind of anywhere I was going, I was running. That was exciting. You know, Forrest Gump was. You know, I got called to double Tom Hanks, and Tom Hanks wasn't the megastar that he is today. He just came off of You've Got Mail and Philadelphia. And, you know, we all kind of knew him from TV. And so he was just kind of coming up through the you know, big star ranks. And I got called to double him, and I thought, that's really cool. And they gave me a script, and I read it, and I go, this is stupid. This is silly. Now, I was new in the film business, so I didn't really put it all together. But when I read it, I was like, yeah, oh, best of luck with this film, but, you know, I'll collect the paycheck. But... But it was fun. We shot most of it in Beaufort, South Carolina, where we shot where I did Some of the things that came out on camera of me doubling time were jump off a shrimp boat and swim to the pier. And right there's an example of where it wouldn't that wasn't a big stunt. It's just that was done in one shot. And Tom Hanks is actually behind the pier on a ladder waiting to climb up the ladder. So you see me swim, and you see Lieutenant Dan, and then you see Tom Hanks climb up the ladder and deliver dialogue. Now, if he would have done the swim that I did, he would have been out of breath. So that's a little secret into that little scene. I also I have run from a pickup truck as it's right on my heels, which was very dangerous because literally the bumper hit the back of my foot one of the takes, and I nearly, you know, stumbled and fell, and I would have been run over because there's nowhere to go. And let's see, I carry soldiers in Vietnam, the Vietnam scene where I pick up Lieutenant Dan and get shot in the buttocks. That was kind of fun running through the woods in Beaufort, South Carolina. So yeah, so that was fun. And when the film came out, I was, you know, of course, I was dumbfounded. I'm like, this is great, you know. So I was very proud to be part of that film.
That's terrific. That's, you know, it's interesting when you're saying, well, you just run. Because last week, I danced with the Diavolo Dance Company. I actually had a chance, you know, to work with the Diavolo Company B through an intensive workshop. And one of the exercises they had us do on the very first day is that we had to run. And we had to run as quickly as we could. And then we had to run as quickly as we could with our eyes closed. And you had to trust that somebody somewhere would stop you before you hit a wall, a stairwell, a hurdle, or something that was in your way. And they said, mechanically, what's the difference between running or running with your eyes closed? Absolutely nothing physically except trust. Mm. The only difference was trust.
Right.
And so for you, when you're saying, well, I'm running in front of a truck, with a pickup truck on my heels, that takes so much trust. So where does that trust muster up in you to be able to trust that you're going to be safe, that the rigs are going to work, that this trick is going to work, that of you flying or falling or this high-speed car crash is going to work? Where does that the trust come into play?
Well, that's a great question. Well, I think I can simplify it and put it into one word, and that would be preparation, proper preparation. By preparing, now I'm going to learn as much about whatever that is and to be comfortable so I can trust it. For example, Forrest Gump, pickup truck, the stunt coordinator was driving the truck. Very experienced stunt coordinator. I trusted him. I trusted him with my life. So if it was just any, if they had just said, okay, hey, can somebody drive this truck? And it was somebody I didn't know, I would not trust it. I would not do it. We'd have to have a little discussion about that and work that out. So I think trust comes with preparation, and that would be just learning as much about it. And knowing the capabilities of myself and those others that are involved. And as we say, Murphy lurks. In other words, Murphy's Law means, and, you know, things can go wrong. So we always say Murphy lurks. That means we got to always have a plan B in case plan A doesn't work. And it should be ingrained in you, and it's got to be instinctual. Sometimes there's not time to think about it. It's just got to happen as an instinct to keep you safe. So, yeah, trust is a big part of it, you know. I trust that was entertaining to you.
Absolutely. And so somebody had asked me, I met a guy who had just moved here from another country, and he was learning English. And he was, he asked me really interesting questions. What's the difference between petite and small? What's the difference between sick and ill? What's the difference between hug and huge? Which I told him that was a huge difference between hug and huge. That's funny. Petite and small, you know, I had trouble with that one. Avenue and street, you know, he was asking me. But he asked me the difference between, you know, risk and fear.
There's a big difference. Mm-hmm.
And so what would you say to that if someone came to you and said, you know, what's the difference between danger and risk? Are danger and risk the same words?
Yeah, I think that's, in my mind, that's easy, but I can see how that can easily be, confusing if you don't really think about it. I deal with fear. I think about fear. I don't, fear is a great thing. Fear keeps me safe, and I always say the day I lose a sense of fear is the day I need to get out of the business. And risk. Well, they're two different things. Risk is an activity, and fear is an emotion. And it's probably not real fear anyway, but it's probably more anxiety for most people. But fear and risk, well, I think they go hand in hand because people don't take risk because they fear whatever the outcome. They fear losing. They fear failing. They fear a lot of things. So I that's kind of my take on fear and risk.
And then what would be the difference between danger and risk?
Well, gosh, it seems like they'd be very similar, but not all. See, danger to me implies harm. Risk doesn't always mean harm. Danger is dangerous. That could mean injury or property loss or bad things, which is okay if you can handle it correctly. Fear is risk. Fear. I have no idea.
They're great questions. You know, when he asked me, I was just like, I don't know, because when I was thinking about, you know, if you invest in a stock, you take a risk. If I roll the dice in the casino, I take a risk, but I'm not in danger. You know, but it seems like if I'm jumping out of a plane, I'm in danger, and I'm taking a risk. Both those things are happening simultaneously. So I don't know that they're the same thing, but they both could be happening simultaneously, maybe.
I think it all equates to the potential outcome. Because when you said if you invested in the stock market, that is dangerous and risky. I say dangerous because what if you invested every dime you had? That could be dangerous. Danger meaning, hey, I just lost every penny I have to my name. I would call that dangerous. I think they kind of dangle and kind of intertwine with each other in certain terms. But I think it really comes down to what is it you have to lose? You know, if you have to lose your life, if you lose your life, that's bad. If you lose, if you're embarrassed because of the outcome, then that's not the end of the world. So.
Right. And I know that you work with helping people, even when you were talking about when, you know, you used to teach skydiving, and I know you work with corporate people as well in overcoming fears. And so how do you help people overcome their fears? Because I want to just come work with you because whether they be, once you learn how to overcome fears, then that you can use that tool in so many different areas of your life. And I love that you actually have a way to help people do that.
Yeah, I love that. I didn't realize that that I had that ability until I kind of looked back and went, wow, look what I've been doing for so many years. I've had the ability to be able to control my fear but what I have enjoyed doing and then I'm actually venturing into some new stuff is helping people with their fears. I've got a long you know, history of teaching different elements in the fear category, meaning I've been a rappelling instructor for many years, skydiving instructor, bungee instructor. I owned and operated the bungee business. I owned and operated a hot air ride business. I'm taking people up. And so I have a lot of experience helping people overcome fear of heights. And that's a lot of people's fear. There's so much need for people to help with fear, because people have, there's a lot of definitions of fear, and, you know, there's things, you know, there's sayings like fear is a false evidence appearing real. But fear in my world, and this is one of my key sayings I say, fear can either paralyze you or it can empower you. So some people, when they get in a fearful situation, they don't know how to act, and they may just clam up and not react at all, and that can be dangerous. Or I found myself, when I get in situations like that, things come very clear, and they slow down, and I can really, my peripheral vision gets very wide, and I can make good decisions under very stressful situations. And I don't know if it's inherent or it's trained from my activities I do, but I love sharing that with other people, and I'm going to continue to share how to deal with fear and taking risk in some of the next stages of what Alan Robinson's going to do. And that's helping basically corporate and general public dealing with their fears.
Okay, so we have a lot of listeners right now that are listening to the show that I'm sure have fear of heights or have their own fears. And so how does someone find you and find your programs and, you know, look for you? Is there a way for someone to contact you, or your website or phone number or an email?
Well, you know, Nicole, I have not implemented my program yet. It's not public. I do have a website, and that is Alan, A-L-L-E-N, Robinson.com. And that's probably going to be the best source to get information. Right now, there's nothing on that that talks about my corporate challenge. Corporate stunt camp is kind of what we're looking at calling it. Because I'm still in the
development stage. It's definitely something but I love that. But people can be following you and they'll see when it pops up, because I know that would just be, oh my gosh, if you can help corporations. I mean, look what you have done and the areas in which you've overcome fear. And like you said, you've owned all these own companies. And so I think that it's such a wonderful idea. And I would definitely, you know, encourage people to go to your website first to see all the wonderful stuff that you're doing. And this stuff is just mind-boggling, but also to follow you and to look for those upcoming things that you have in the future, because I'm sure that as soon as they come up, people are going to just want to jump right on that way again. So.
Well, I'm so excited about it because I love helping people, and I love to see people overcome challenges. And it's just a great sense of satisfaction, but you're just, you know, doing the world a good thing, you know, by sharing your talents, whatever they are. And I see that, you know, there's a great need for that. And I'm excited about it. It's going to come about quicker than I think. The whole program, it's going to do really well. But so I would just say, you know, just keep watching. I mean, you can follow me. I mean, it has my resume on there. You can see the films and television shows I do. It's updated constantly, the resume is, and you kind of see the activities and learn a little bit more about me.
I love that. And now I wanted to ask you about the rigging. Because I know that I went to the awards. This is really funny. You know, you and I, we were at the Global Stunt Awards. Mm-hmm. And I was with a friend of mine, and I don't think I even shared this with you. I was with a friend of mine who's a singer, and she's a very well-known singer. And fitness is not her thing. you know, even though I've encouraged her for years, she's really, you know, her strongest muscle is her voice and her power, and boy, she can bring a house down. But we showed up at the Stunt Awards, and when we got to the threshold to give our tickets, she took a step back. And she said, "My God, Nicole," she said, "it's like Noah's Ark. If you wanted to start a new race, you would beam up these people." She said, "Look at these people. Look how healthy and strong they are."
That's funny.
So, and I love that. It's like Noah's Ark.
I had never looked at
this is stunt world that way, but I did. I looked around at all these beautiful, healthy, strong, virile people. And, you know, it was fantastic. And then, you know, so that really set my evening afire. And then to sit at the awards and to know now that the riggers are being recognized and how important rigging is as part of the stunt community and as part of stunts. And so could you talk a little bit about rigging?
Yeah. I'd be happy to, because rigging is a passion of mine. But rigging is very important to stunts. And just to kind of define it, if you don't know what rigging and stunts are, rigging, it's generally going to be, let's say, wire work, which is if you see somebody, here's one example of rigging and wire work. But there's a device we use in the business called a ratchet, and it's just a big piston that pulls. But we hook a cable to it, and then that cable goes up to a pulley up somewhere high and then down to the stunt performer. And the stunt performer's wearing a harness underneath his wardrobe. And that cable's attached to it. And then when we fire this ratchet, this big piston, it jerks the performer back. I think we've all seen that where maybe somebody gets kicked or punched or shot, and they go flying back, and you're like, that's
sure.
Not real.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, it creates a great effect of us flying, whatever it needs to do, but fly. And that's rigging. So rigging, that's one little part of rigging. We've all seen people fly through the air or do somersaults over cars. And there's so much
rigging. We love that.
Rigging we do. Yeah. So that's another big aspect of rigging. Sometimes we see people jump off of a building and there's nothing below them. And they land. I'm like, well, how'd they do that? There was no airbag or crash pad, and they land on their feet. Or they'll jump between buildings. You'll see somebody jump from one building to another, and it's, you know, 150 feet drop. Well, it might be a little bit risky, but what you don't see is maybe a rig above them, which the guy will be attached to a cable. So if he should not make it, he's not going to fall. So rigging is behind the scenes, and it's really good to see that it's recognized now, because it is a big part of our industry. But what I love about it and why I do it, is because rigging is a challenge. It's a puzzle. It's a problem. When somebody says, "Hey, I need to fly somebody across this room right here," or you're in the middle of the desert, if we need somebody to fly, and you're like, "Well, I don't have any rafters in the sound stage here. I don't have a crane. I don't have a. How can I make these things happen?" So I love figuring out puzzles, and that's kind of what rigging is. But the other part of rigging, which is very important, is being safe about it and knowing strengths of cable and knowing strength, knowing what the human body can endure. If we pull them back too quick, they may black out. If we drop them and we stop them too quick, it may injure the performer. You know, so there's a lot of knowledge. It's not something you learn overnight. But I started rigging early, and then I also became a FAA parachute rigger, which I rig parachutes, but I use that knowledge that I learned from that. Rigging is always just taking information from like rock climbing world or the stage concert world or different parts of rigging or arborists, people who climb trees and cut branches down. We can learn something from what they do. So we circus Soleil does a lot of flying now, And we watch what they do, and we use some of the same kind of winches they use to fly people around stage. We use them in the film business now. So that's a little insight into rigging.
That's fabulous. You know, when I went to Cirque du Soleil, I went to the Love Show, and I went with a whole group of, like, transformational leaders and speakers from around the world, and many of the people had never had the opportunity to even experience a Cirque show, even though, you know, I've been working and experiencing Cirque since I was little. But I would say 99% of the people I was with, this was their very first experience. And they were watching the stage with their jaw hitting the floor, and they were just in awe of the Cirque show. And the entire time, my eyes were on the ceiling, and I was looking at the rigs. I was like, wow, look how advanced rigs have come. And now you can get anybody off the street to do it. Like, those rigs were amazing. Some of those harnesses, some of that ability, even to turn the body, even the lower. I mean, I was just like, I literally must have looked like a crazy person because my eyes were on the ceiling during the whole Love Show.
Well, you know a little bit more because you're in that world and you've been there and watched that. I was privileged because I had another one of my companies. I designed and fabricated stunt equipment, and I made harnesses. Well, for a while, I was the designer and fabricator of Cirque du Soleil's harnesses for Mystere and in Las Vegas. So I made all their harnesses. I made their silk act. I made the strap act. So anything that was sewn, I made it. And so they would fly me to Vegas. I would go measure a performer, and I'd come back to my shop. And I would make it and send it to them. And there was a nice symbiosis there because I got to work and watch their rigging. And look at all their high-speed winches that are up tucked away in the rafters that most people don't get to see. And it's amazing. It's amazing what you can do with money. Let's put it that way, because these are very expensive pieces of equipment. So I've had a little opportunity to peek behind the scenes of the Cirque du Soleil world.
That's great. Oh, my gosh. It's so amazing. And then when you were talking about the rigging and you're talking about, you know, how strong the bungee has to be, or that you have to know how strong something is or what a body can endure, because you can break someone's ribs or they can pass out or whatever that is. And so you have to know the strength and the timing. And so, you know, but as a stuntman and as someone that lives on the edge, because that's what you do, you live every day of your life on the edge. What gives you strength?
Well, personally, my strength comes from my faith. And my faith, my belief in Jesus Christ is my Lord and Savior. So that's where my strength comes from. I pray all the time because, I mean, stuff I do, I'm like, oh, please keep me safe. And my deep down strength comes from my faith. Having the right mindset and being physically able to do whatever it requires. So, you know, if your mind's not clear, you're not going to perform well. If you're physically not able to perform, you're not going to. So strength comes in mind and, you know, the mind, body, and spirit. And it's no different than in the life itself. So my strength, that's where it comes from. Yeah.
Such a beautiful answer. And then, you know, can anybody be a stuntman, a stumper? I mean, can women do it? Can older people do it? Can kids do it? And how does somebody begin? If they're interested in this as a career or craft, where do you start?
Yes, you too could become a stuntman. 1995, sign up today. But wait, there's more. You could become an actor. No, sorry.
So, I mean, truly, you know, yesterday I was in, I just got back this morning. I was in Salt Lake City, Utah. And yesterday I saw, you know, a female male carrier or whatever. And I was with someone and I said, do we call them, you know, female male people? Because it doesn't really make sense to be a female male.
deliver. Another way to say that. But a female male. But do you, you know, the same way as that they're like female altar boys or whatever. It's like, you know, you don't know what to call it. But do you, are there female stunt people? Alternative.
Yeah,
are there female?
That's a good question.
Are there female stunt people, kids, you know, older people? Can anybody get into stunts? You know, how do you start? How do you become a stunt person? Is there training? Is there, you know, union? What? How does that work?
I'd love to answer that one. Well, first of all, stunts in film and television are covered under the Screen Actors Guild and AFTRA. That's our union, which the two unions have merged together. So we're covered under a union. That's how it's handled for all major productions. Live shows, that's something different. It's not covered under any union. Can anybody do it? No. Is there a need for all kinds of people? Yes. Now, I say not everybody is cut out for stunts because not everybody's cut out to be a lot of things. So it does take a special
open-heart surgeon or something, you know, right?
Right. Not everybody can, you know, be a, what was the latest term I heard, which was funny, a rocket surgeon. I love the term, you know, a rocket surgeon. Anyway, but the thing with stunts is you need all kinds. Because in film and television, there's all kinds of actors. There's kids, there's old people, there's male, there's female, there's tall, there's short, there's black, there's white, there's yellow and green. And so there's a need for every type of person. So how do you do that? Well, let's start with kids, because we sometimes have to have stunt double kids. But most kids that are working as stunt people have parents that were stunt people. It's really kind of touchy because a lot of, you know, parents want their kids to be stunt people, but it does take a certain mindset and you know, there is a certain risk. So usually kids come from a family of stunt people. I'm still laughing over that.
Movie The Titanic. Okay, you know, I was just thinking about the movie Titanic. There were a lot of people supposedly on that ship. Mm-hmm. And you had lots of people that had to swim, right? I mean, didn't they need, like, everybody?
Well, you need all types. You need all types. I've done a lot of scenes like Titanic. I did not work on Titanic, but I've done a lot of shows that had big scenes with all kinds of people. So you need young, old, big, small. So you need a diversity of types of people. You're going to hire female and male and big people, short people. But we never hire anybody that can't do the job. So we do not compromise on safety. The person that we're hiring has to have the qualifications and has to have the background, and we have to know with confidence that the person can do this without getting hurt or hurting somebody else. But we use a lot of, different people to double different people. That makes a lot of sense. I think went too many concussions there. That didn't sound right.
For an actor, is more than one person? Could there be more than one stunt person? One person repels, one person's the diver, like a movie like 007?
Yeah.
Can there be multiple stunt people for the actor?
Now, yes, and lots of times we do have several stunt doubles for that actor, because they may be, one case may be where we need a specialized stunt. We need that one guy who can ride a motorcycle down a handrail sideways. you know. And then we need a, you know, stunt double that specializes, and he's a really good fighter. So he's going to make the fights look really good. You know, maybe, you know, there's a, you know, so sometimes you'll have to specialize. Sometimes we have more than one because of the shooting schedule. So, and then that just means because the first unit and the second unit of shooting, it's going to go on simultaneously, and it's more cost per, it's better. It makes better money sense to have two people working than stop, have the double go to the next scene. And you kind of get where I'm going with that. So
yeah. So okay. So yeah. so a guy that rides a motorcycle sideways, or a guy that fights, or somebody that does like high dives, or someone that rappels off buildings. How do you learn how to do these things? Are there stunt schools? Or, I mean, not something that they teach you in high school. You learn, like, you know, wood shop and rappelling off the side of a building.
Well, you're right. My high school, we didn't have rappelling 101 or motorcycle 101. But we did have skydiving 101. That's a great question. Because, like I've always said, the more you learn about everything, the more you'll work. So, if you're only good on horseback, you'll only get those horseback jobs. They're not very often. But if you learn how to do fights and falls and fire and car work and this and that and the other, the more talents you have in your bag of tricks, the more you work. Now, so I always encourage people to learn as much and continue to train in different areas. And so that's my recommendation, is that always, you know, look what the skills are. The basic skills and stunts are gymnastics. Now, I didn't do gymnastics, but I was a pole vaulter. I was a springboard diver. I played football. But those activities are very similar to gymnastics. As a pole vaulter and springboard diver, we worked out with the gymnast. So, but a basic gymnast background is kind of a core to a basic stunt person, because, you know, some of the basic stuff we do is just falling. You know, you're going to get punched, you're going to fall over this couch, you know, or we're going to throw you over this railing and you're going to fall 20 feet into this, you know, this crash pad. Well, you better be able to do it without landing on your head or missing the pad, or, you know. So that's kind of basic, you know, stunt. So there's not any schools. There are workouts. There's some gyms around L.A. There's some driving schools where people go to learn how to do car stunts. But you look at what skill interests you and just go out and do it and learn it.
Well, how much fun to have a career in craft and, you know, to keep developing additional skills. I mean, for me, I do everything crazy. I mean, you know that. Not, you know, mm-hmm. nearly as much as you do, but it's something I love to do. And I was at a speaker's event, and it was all men. It was like 500 men and 3 women at the speaker's event. And they said, before we begin, turn to the person next to you, tell them your name and what you'd like to do for fun. And so the guy next to me stood up and he said, well, ladies first. And I just smiled and I said, my name is Nicole. And for fun, I do high wire trapeze, I ride bareback horses, and I race sailboats. And he said, is this a joke? I said, no, that's really what I like to do for fun. But
that's
we all have
great.
Our own levels of what interests us and, you know, where
great.
Our joy comes from. So.
That's great. You know, that just reminds me. But people like you, and especially stunt women, have a hard time, especially if they're they have a hard time because the women get to do very macho jobs. So the guys get quite jealous of that, you know, if you're not doing it. If you're not a stunt guy and you're married to a, or have a girlfriend that's a stunt person, and it's like, they get kind of jealous because it's like, wow, you're doing what? You're flying trapeze? I always wanted to do that, but I'm not, you know. But, you know, there's something for everybody. But I do see that a lot where it can be embarrassing to some people.
So, No, but it's fun. I mean, it's, you know, I absolutely love it. And one of my favorite things, you know, that I've had the chance to do was I was in St. Thomas and I got to race on underwater motorcycles.
Oh,
my gosh. It was like the most fun that I think I've ever had. And, of course, I came back and every man that I talked to only wanted to go to St. Thomas to race underwater motorcycles. And I think I was the only girl under the water, but I had the best. I just came back up and I was like, again, let's do it again.
Wow. I don't even think I know what that is, you know.
It's
underwater.
Called the Bob. Yeah, it's called the Bob. Like, and they actually, you know, you get onto these little motorcycles in the water. They're bobbing, and then you put on, like, an astronaut's helmet that gives you air, and they pressurize you down to the bottom of the ocean, and you race underwater motorcycles. And it was a blast. It was truly one of the most fun things. So, you know, but just
wow.
The idea of being a stunt person and that you can do all these things, like, you know, you can ride motorcycles sideways on banks, and you can, you know, jump out of airplanes, and you can race really fast cars and not get a ticket. You know.
Well, you certainly get the opportunity to do very unique things. You know, speaking along those lines, some of the benefits, the unique things, the opportunities are just, you know, you don't get tickets for speeding but one that sticks out is I did this job and I spent 3 weeks on the side of the Hoover Dam. I got to rappel the side of the Hoover Dam. The Hoover Dam is 600 feet high, and I spent 3 weeks climbing all over it. I won't get into some of the. I mean, I could be here for a couple hours talking about it, but it was one of those unique opportunities. At the end of the job and the end of the film, the Corps of Engineers, who managed the dam, as we call them, the dam guys, came up and gave the two of us that got to do this a certificate saying we're only one of a few people to ever, you know, rappelled on the side of the Hoover Dam. So, you know, I pinch myself going, wow, I get to do that, and I get paid.
Wow. Now that's probably, you have no idea right now how jealous I am and how excited I am for you. And for our audience that doesn't know the word, because, you know, what is rappelling? Could you just tell people just, I mean, I know what it is, but just so they know exactly what that would look like to rappel the Hoover Dam.
That's when you don't take a shower for quite a while. And, that's a different rappelling. Sorry. Too many concussions. Now, rappelling is an activity done to lower yourself via wearing a harness and a rope and some other technical equipment. So you've seen people that rock climb up, and then in order to get down, they rappel. So it's you're basically controlling your descent down a rope via you using a harness and a rappel device and a carabiner, and you got gloves on and a kind of a thumbnail sketch of rappelling. Mm-hmm.
That is so thrilling, that you had that challenge and that you achieved it and that you're in less than a handful of people's company that have ever had that experience in the world. I mean, that must be such an exhilaration, even just to know that you came to this world, you came to this planet, got to do something. That's like, you know, going to the moon. As long as you get to be one of the few astronauts that get to go to the moon.
Well, I have one better than that. Not to tout my own achievements, but I got the opportunity to become the next pilot of the world's only rocket belt. Now, rocket belt, you may have seen it at the opening of the 84 Olympics or Fall Guy, or seen it in special events where you have a backpack that allows you to fly. And I was selected and trained to become the next pilot. So I went around the world with it as a technician, while learning about it and while it was flying, and I had the opportunity to travel some pretty unique international places and events. And then I started training, and I had about 40 training flights on the rocket belt, which is it's such a unique experience because there's only been about 7 pilots ever. And I was selected, and I was training on it, and it was just incredible being at the right place at the right time and talents and to be part of that. But unfortunately, halfway through my training, I unrelated to the rocket belt, I broke my leg, and I broke my femur, and it was going to be quite a while before it was before I was back up to 100%, and they need to move on and get a new pilot, and I was okay with that. But the point is that it was a very unique opportunity that only one of, you know, handful of people have ever done. You'd step on a backpack with 700 horsepower and just crack the wrist. You could just lift off and fly. And so that was another
amazing. Yeah. Oh my gosh, what an incredible thing. And that actually leads me to, I mean, what an honor too that they would choose you before. I mean, that just is a testament to you, to your strength, to your power, to your skill, to your talent, to your experience. I mean, what an absolute thrill just to be chosen. So, you know, you really are my hero. But just so you know that I say that, but I don't say that lightly. You really are. So I truly think that. But that does bring me to a question I wanted to ask because, you know, as we talk about danger, so some people do get hurt, right? I mean, we all get hurt. You know, I fall in love, you know, I meet a guy and, you know, it doesn't work out and I get hurt, you know, so. that's a different kind of hurt, right? Like we all in life, you know, step on landmines, but some people... It's you know, so someone thinking about being a stunt person says, there's great money and you're working a little bit of hours and you get to, like, live your fantasies and dreams. It's also dangerous, right?
Well, it is. It's inherently dangerous. And I think that's part of what attracts us as well. But you have to accept that fact that you are taking risk. And I always say stunts are like playing football, that if you play it long enough, you will get hurt. Now, hopefully it's not bad. It's not, you know, it's not going to be, you know, and anybody who's been doing stunts for a while has been hurt in some degree. It could be as simple as, you know, sprained ankle to, you know, much worse. We don't dwell on that, but it is out there. As I like to say, I think I've put my orthopedic surgeon's kids through college just because I have a great orthopedic surgeon who has rebuilt me. And, but you know, if you don't take a chance, you never know how good it's going to be. So we love, you know, taking calculated risk. And you know, if I think I'm going to get seriously hurt, injured during a stunt, I'm not going to do it. But a lot of stunts are, you can look at and go, hey, I got to fall down these set of stairs. I am going to be very sore. It is going to beat me up. I am going to hurt, but it's a different kind of hurt. If I thought I was going to break a leg, say no.
Right. So, yeah. You know, it's great that you say that. I actually was talking to a friend of mine who's a chiropractor the other day, Jeffrey Malone, who I recommend, you know, to people always. And he was talking about, like, when you stub your toe, that it hurts, but you're not hurt. You know, your body's not broken. Mm-hmm. It's not like a slip disc. It's not, you know, you are fine. Your body is fine. Your mind is fine. Your consciousness is fine. You're going to be okay. In the moment, it hurts, but you are not hurt. And that there is a huge difference in that when you get a splinter, you know, or whatever, you know, with a paper cut. You go, you know, and it hurts, but you're not hurt. And so sometimes those little bruises, those little pains, those little doinks when you smash your elbow, you know, on the table in your house or whatever that is in that moment. But that doesn't take away from you exploring your house or dancing in your living room or the joy that you feel or, you know, that when we expand our body and our mind and our consciousness, that sometimes, you know, we bang into things or sometimes, you know, we'll find that there's something, you know, that has come up against us, but that's different than... You know, us being destroyed, we're like weevils. We wobble and we don't fall down. We bounce right back up and we just keep moving forward, you know. Maybe something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's how much you can tolerate. Because in stunts, It's how much you can tolerate, because a lot of times we'll get bumped and bruised, but you got to go back to work the next day. Ouch. Okay. So, you know, a lot of ice, a lot of Advil. But pain is part of stunts, only because it's very physical. It may just be muscle soreness, or maybe, you know, taping up a sprained ankle so you can run. You know, you can't take it easy. You'll be able to take it easy at the end of the film and then recoup it. But living with pain is just part of the job description.
That's, you know, I just love the whole idea of everything. You know, it's living on the edge, living fearlessly, taking risks, taking chances, seeing the perimeters and the you know, unlimited boundaries of the physical potential, and not only being able to take, you know, yourself there, but being able to thrill audiences, show other people what's possible, add adventure, you know, into people's lives, and really to create movie magic, as well as stage magic, as well as new boundaries of what's possible in life.
Yeah, and now with what we're so excited about is helping others that aren't in the film and television industry, and the new program that I'm coming up with, that it's going to let me work with others to help them deal with their fears and deal with risk. So that's what I'm really excited about.
I love that. You know, it's like the zip line, or, you know, getting people up, right, and doing all of these things that overcome fears. And I think there couldn't be something more fun. And now, I know we were talking just a minute before the show, and you were saying that you have a motto. Do you have a motto?
My father, who just told me this, and, you know, as a kid it didn't mean anything, but I kept on saying it to myself, and now I see how true it is. But my motto is that you can do anything, you can do anything if you set your mind to it. It sounds kind of vague, but you can, because your mind is just such the most powerful tool in our toolbox, in our arsenal. And if you set your mind to something, you can do it. And it is a pretty simple motto, but I've never believed that I can't do anything. I may have to make changes or make modifications to do it, but I've never said, "Well, I can't do that." It's just not in my vocabulary that I say I can't do things. It's like, I may not be able to, I might have to do it a little bit differently, but I certainly can do it. So that's kind of the motto I live
on.
I
love that. I think that's what a fabulous motto, and I would love to put that on our website if it's okay with you, because I actually think that's such a great way to live, and I think that's really inspirational for people. And then I had a question. When I was working with Diablo this week, one of the things that I learned that I did not know before is teamwork and sort of unity. Mm-hmm. Up until last week, I was always, you know, the high diver, or I was the contortionist or the gymnast or the dancer or the figure skater, mm-hmm. or whatever that is that I was doing, and riding horses. And if somebody was going to catch me, it was like one person that I was doing adagio with, or the catcher on the trapeze, someone that knew my body, that knew my timing, mm-hmm. that knew me. But I have never had to trust a team of people that I knew that at any, you know, we would start the day with their hands in the center and look everybody in the eye and say, "I would die for you." And you would know that anybody there would lay their body down under yours if you were falling from the sky. And so I know in stunts, it does take a team, that you do have the riggers and you do have the car people and you do have your coordinators. And so how does that work to make stunts come to life? Is it teamwork, or is it just that individual who's fearless?
No, it is definitely teamwork. And which is kind of another little thing. It seems like we have a lot of them in stunt business, but one is that you don't even have to like the guy next to you, but you'll watch his back and keep him safe. I laugh about that because they all like each other. But But yeah, you know, that is our job as stunt people, is watching people's back and keeping people safe. But it is a team effort. We are part of a big team. When you're making a film, there's 100 plus people on that set that are responsible for making that movie. So there's, everybody's got a job, but our job, not only doing the stunts on film, but we have that safety mindset. So we're part of the big team, and we all play together. You know, it takes a team to get what we do. There's, you certainly can't do stunts by yourself. So that's, that answers that.
Yes. And I mean, and brilliantly, and I think that for me, when people, and I know that, and I just wanted to touch on this for a minute because I hadn't really even thought about it till right now, but that's why a lot of stuntmen and stuntwomen go to schools and they teach so that kids don't jump off buildings, or that they teach kids these are stunts and these are stage fights and this is safety and this is what we do and this is how we do it, so kids don't see a movie and then think, oh, I can do this, and just jump from my building to the building next door or whatever that is. And so, right? And so so have you ever been part of those programs or are familiar with those programs of education for children and stunts?
Well, I have. I've been asked, and I have spoken at many, many schools. I enjoy speaking to kids at school because they think first of all, with stunts, most people aren't privy to behind-the-scenes of stunts. So that's what makes it really interesting to a lot of people, you know, because we don't know a lot about it, because there's not a lot out there about what we do. So it is intriguing. But kids in particular, when I talk to kids at school, they you know, there's I get people, the kids that think that we actually hit each other when we're doing fight scenes. Like, you know, we're actually punching people and making contact. And I can see that. I can understand that. If you weren't told or didn't know, I mean, it certainly looks real. That means we're doing our job, but we don't actually hit each other. So it's nice to be able to share that with kids that, you know, I call it we make movie magic. We're high-risk illusionist. It's another one of my buzzwords. High-risk illusionist. And
That's a very good word.
We create, you know, there is, as we talked about, there's a ton of risk and danger, but a lot of what we do is fake. And I mean that in a good sense, but in other words, we're doing fake fights. And you know, the explosions don't have shrapnel coming out of it, so they're not going to really blow you up. Or we can cheat things, because on camera we're working in two dimensions. We're not in a three-dimensional world. We're working with camera lenses that can make things look closer than they are, you know. So I love teaching that and sharing that with kids, because kids are, you know, absorb that. And I've seen lots of times where I've talked to kids about stunts in schools, and immediately afterwards they start fighting each other. So I've learned to not focus on fights with kids, because all of a sudden they want to start emulating and imitating you. I'm like, no, it takes training, and it's skill to be able to throw a punch, you know, 6 inches from a guy's face, but doing it with a lot of force, you know. It's skill on both parts. You don't want the person to lean into it and accidentally punch them, and you have to have the skill to throw the punch exactly where you need it to go. So, yeah.
That's such a great answer. It really is, because that's what, you know, when I think about an individual compared to a stunt person or a stunt coordinator, I mean, I know you've done that, where you've coordinated stunts, and that must be crazy when you have more than one stunt. One stunt is enough in a film to think about, and to think about coordinating a movie or a commercial or a shoot where there are multiple events and multiple people you have to keep safe and multiple, you know, visions that you have to fulfill. And what's it like to coordinate?
Stress? No. No, I don't focus on that. It goes back to the basics, proper preparation. I didn't come out proper preparation. Big films take a lot out of you. It can take 5 or 6 months out of your life, and I mean that. You can have a long period of preparation before the film where you break down all the stunts, and you may have a lot of major stunts, and you're hiring a lot of people to do a lot of things, and you got a lot of things to work out and practice and rehearse and you it takes a team to do that, and you have to the whole production team to do that. But it will take your life away for that period of time, because as a stunt coordinator, you don't get to go home and quit thinking about work. It's constantly on your mind. So for 4, 5, 6 months, I may be involved coordinating a film. It consumes me. Only because I can't leave well enough alone, and I got to make sure everything is perfect, because that's what we do. You want to make sure you achieve the stunt that the director and the production want to get, but you also want to make sure that nobody gets hurt. You want to make sure that you can do it multiple times, not just once. So there's a lot that goes on in your mind as a stunt coordinator. I love it. It does take a good chunk of your life, but it's fulfilling at the end. You are ready for some time off when you're done with it. But when you see the film, when it's in its completion, and you go to the theater and you hear people and you see people like, wow, that was really, that was a great film, and we really enjoyed the stunts and blah, blah, blah. And then it all pays off, and you're like, yeah, so I didn't sleep for 5 months, I got over it. And so coordinating is definitely a challenge. Mm-hmm.
To orchestrate, to be the conductor, because I always think about that, that you look at any great symphony and the greatest musicians in the world, but then you have that conductor that once he moves the baton, all of those individual instruments become like the greatest music in the world. And you have somebody like a stunt coordinator who has all this incredible talent, and by, moving his still stick or whatever, all of a sudden this movie comes to life, and you have one of the greatest action-adventure movies, or, movies that are blockbusters that people just love to see, because all of these elements come together and create this incredible performance for the viewer. And so to be able, like you're saying, to see each stage and to prepare for each stage and to break everything down and to keep everybody safe, but at the same time, be able to do something that's just so darn spectacular that just blows people away. What a great job. What a great life to be able to do that.
I feel very blessed to have this opportunity, because I'm extremely lucky, because there's no formula for success in the stunt business. If it was, everybody would be successful, and there'd be tons more people working, but I still very fortunate for my opportunities and thankful to a lot of people that have helped me along the way. And I think with hard work and determination and being humble about what you do, will get you a long way in the business.
That's so brilliant. Now, do you have, and we haven't talked about this at all, so, but do you have any personal heroes? Like when I was a kid, it was Aga Corbett. I used to watch her in the Olympics and say, I want to do that. Have you ever watched anybody or had a personal hero that, people could be able to learn somebody that you just said, I wanted to do that, or that would just be so cool to do?
Well, as a kid, I watched Evel Knievel, but I didn't really, want to emulate him. I didn't want to, I thought that was kind of cool, but I always thought it was kind of risky. But I like the showmanship of it. I didn't really have a particular hero that I can think of right now, but I can tell you right now I have one. Right now, and his name is Nick Walenda. And he recently walked wire across the Grand Canyon. And last year he did it across Niagara Falls. And just to watch, because he's seventh generation of of circus, and his family has such a rich history. And but to watch him work, it's just I love it because it's a mental challenge, and that's one of the things I enjoy about stunts and I admire in other people is the mental aspect of it, because that can make it or break it for you. To answer your question about, you know, hero, he's my hero right now, because, you know, just when he walked across the Grand Canyon last weekend, I was like, man, that took a lot of everything, you know.
And I just wanted to share two things. You know, I think that's such a great hero to have. And I wanted to share two things with our audience, you know, that they may not know. One is that he did not have wires, right? That he actually, he did not have safety, which to me, I mean, and he had done it once before, right, where they forced him on the network to have safety, and this time he chose not to. And the other was that the way that he trained also was through prayer, that you were talking about what gives you strength. And I know that he's talked about that a great deal on a lot of the talk shows, you know, how he prepared himself in prayer for, you know, the knowingness and the faith and the trust, you know, as we talk, which are all, you know, valuable things to have in life, you know, as a stunt person or just as somebody that is walking outside their door into humanity.
Right.
And so I, you know, so he's definitely one of my heroes too, not just for the stunt and the skill that he did, but for his fearlessness, for his faith. You know, he was one of the Flying Walindas. I know when I was a kid, you know, I used to watch them all the time, and gosh, I love them. And the fact that he's chosen to do something to break, you know, barriers and of time and records, but that he had so much trust that he chose not to have safety and in himself and in, you know, and in everything. And so just bringing back to what gives you strength, I can see, you know, why he's one of your heroes, as I think he is for so many people. And certainly I think it's such a great choice because he's definitely one of mine as well. So.
Good. Yeah. Yeah. Amazing man. He's so super strong because he's not afraid to show his faith publicly on national TV, which I thought is very bold, and so I admire that. But you know, he chose not to have any, you know, a safety wire or any type of safety. So if he should fall, he's going to fall, you know, 1,500 feet. Now, but his safety is, and he can do this without falling. So it's not, you know, if I fall, it's like, I mean, if he should have a problem, you know, he trained, he had the confidence going into it, I guess is kind of where I'm going, and that's what you have to have. Because if there's a little bit of doubt in there, then it'll eat you up and you know, game over. So his sense of confidence is incredible.
Well, and so is yours. And we so appreciate you being with the show today. So once more, give a shout-out with your website so everybody can find you.
Well, the website is www.allenrobinson, and that's spelled A-L-L-E-N, Robinson.com. And just keep an eye on that, and the future programs will be announced. Right now, it's just it has some pretty cool demo reels. It's got a couple of my
amazing
demo reels.
Amazing. Amazing demo reels. And, yes.
We're
honored that you are here. And this is just such a fun, spectacular thing. And I want to thank you so much
Nicole,
for being with
us
you
today.
So much.
Thank you so much. It's an honor and privilege.
Thank you. And so, you know, wishing you all the best, and we will be following you. And for everybody, you know, take a risk. Find Allen Robinson, you know, go to watch his reels. You're just going to love it. Follow his work. When he has his programs, jump into his programs, learn how to overcome fearlessness. And really, it will change your life. And we welcome you to join us next week. We've got so many wonderful guests coming up. We have Nick Baer, the Soul Whisper. We have the Lefko Institute talking to us about how to release our beliefs and get to the other side of everything that we believe. We have Ben Newman, who is the Millionaire Mentor, teaching us how to become millionaires. So we have so many exciting shows, and we look forward to having you join us. But this week was definitely special because, like I said, Alan Robinson is one of my all-time heroes and mentors, and just personally one of my favorite people on the planet. And what he does is really not just create movie magic, but creates magic in so many people's lives, and certainly, you know, magic in his own. So what a great job. So if you're thinking about being a stuntman, contact him. It's a great job, and I wish everybody a wonderful week. This is Nicole Brandon from Unlimited Life, and thanking Alan Robinson, and thanking you. Have a great day.